man has already been designed by the Almighty and rectified, if you would, or ratified through the words of Messiah, that the gospel of the kingdom is the only hope for man. The gospel of the kingdom of heaven is the only hope for man. We cannot take any other message to creation other than the message the Creator has given us to take. Shalom, saints, and welcome to our verse-by-verse study of the Gospel according to Matthew. I'm your host and teacher, Arthur Bailey. In this podcast, Messiah's Bloodline, we will examine Matthew's efforts to demonstrate to his readers that Yeshua was the prophesied Messiah with royal bloodline, and that faith in him was crucial to the restoration of the kingdom of Israel and salvation for the nations of the world. The bloodline of Yeshua reveals that Yeshua's ancestors were a mixture of Israelites, Canaanites, and Moabites. In this genealogical trace, Matthew traces Yeshua's genealogy back through David to Abraham, the father of us all who live by faith. The genealogy of Yeshua is vital prophetically in determining if Yeshua is in fact the prophesied Messiah. So, let's study. In Matthew chapter 1. Now, as I said last week, we dealt with the introduction. And in the introduction, we looked at who wrote Matthew, the audience that Matthew wrote to, when and why Matthew wrote this particular gospel. We looked at the timeline and the things that were going on. And in this genealogy, there's a tendency, I knew when I was a Baptist and even in the Pentecostal church, teachers and preachers, they paid little attention to genealogy. Part of it because trying to pronounce the names or whatever the case may be, folks who would slaughter the name and not necessarily figure out or understand why is the genealogy there in the first place? You see, Father has spoke things that go thousands of years. And the genealogy help us to make those connections to the things that he's spoken prophetically. And Matthew know that he's dealing with an audience that have some knowledge of where the Messiah is supposed to come from. Now, we're going to see some things here today that I hope will broaden your scope and understanding so that when you approach the scriptures, you will have a good way of approaching it in the sense of looking for everything that is there, not trying to add to something, not trying to read or project your thoughts into it, because there are things that we don't understand that Father say in his word, and we try to explain it to ourselves in a way that we get it, and then when we have conversations with other people, we want to give them what we think it is. Well, I think I think that's there because, and we want to try to give a reason for what is there and oftentimes overlook what is actually there. So, Matthew chapter 1, verse 1, the book of the generation of Yeshua Messiah, the son of David, the son of Abraham. Now, that's a mouthful because here we're looking at 14 generations in between, as we're going to see here in a moment.
David did not give birth to Yeshua. David's wife did not give birth to Yeshua. David's wives gave birth to children. Who gave birth to children? Who gave birth to children? You get it? All the way down. But Matthew just simply connects Yeshua with David and then with Abraham. The genealogy of Yeshua is vital prophetically in determining if Yeshua is in fact the prophesied Messiah. Matthew traces Yeshua's bloodline back through Perez, the son of Tamar, and Judah to Israel, to Isaac, the son of Abraham, the father of us all who live by faith. In this genealogical trace, Matthew's efforts here is to demonstrate to his readers that Yeshua was and is the prophesied Messiah connected to royal bloodline, and that faith in him was not only crucial to the restoration of the kingdom of Israel as king, but also to the salvation for the nations of the world. And this is the power of the gospel, which is why we have to keep the gospel in accordance to what Yeshua said, lest we diminish its power by giving people the gospel about Jesus instead of the gospel Yeshua preached. And there's a difference. The gospel about Jesus leads to an altar call to confess Jesus. The gospel that Yeshua preached leads to a life change. People can give their lives to Jesus with their lips and still live their lives the way they see fit, the way they choose, and then determine what denomination they're going to practice their faith, and then what preacher or teacher they're going to submit to, and then leave and run when they hear something they don't like or something they disagree with, as if they have all knowledge. This is why you'll find many people church hopping, messianic hopping. People come looking for certain things. You have gone into places looking for certain things, not even realizing that we're walking by sight. We're not walking by faith, because faith cometh by what? Hearing. And hearing by the word of Jehovah, not your favorite preacher. Even your favorite preacher gets it wrong sometimes. I know. I've got it wrong sometimes. And I've also had to acknowledge that even in ministry, I've gotten things wrong because I'm preaching what had been preached to me. The things that I'd been taught is what I was teaching. Only to come to find out that I had been taught some things that weren't exactly aligned with what was written. So it's not that the word changed, my teaching changed. Why? Because I believed I was teaching the word. But I was teaching what I had been taught. And if I'm going to teach what I've been taught, I better make sure that I'm listening to the right teacher. And there's only one. The genealogy or bloodline of Yeshua reveals that Yeshua's ancestors were a mixture of Israelites, Canaanites, and Moabites. Matthew traces Yeshua's genealogy back to Abraham through David. In verse 2, Abraham begat Isaac, and Isaac begat Jacob. Now, we know that father changed Jacob's name to Israel. And Israel begat Judas. Now, notice this, because when we were going through John, I wanted us to see that the word Judas is not in the Old Testament. But the Greek translation of Judah is Judas. And in the first verse of Matthew's gospel, it identifies Judah as Judas. And so what I did is I had to change Judas to Judah. Because some people will hear Judas and where is their mind going? Go to the one, and now, you know, you'll get a question. Well, how can Judas be, you know, the father of didn't Judas betray Yeshua? This is a different Judas, folks. See, people make associations with certain things, and if you say Judas to anybody in the earth, even most people who ain't read the Bible, they know that Judas betrayed Jesus. But how many of you know there was a lot of Judases in the Bible? And I'm not talking about betrayers. Their name here, Judas, is actually Judah. Jehovah changed Jacob's name to Israel, but he is not once referenced as the man Israel or Israel the father in the New Testament. And here is how I believe that, the name Israel is used in reference as, in the New Testament, the people of Israel, the land of Israel, the house of Israel, the tribes of Israel, the children of Israel, the king of Israel, the men of Israel, the sons of Israel. But the name Israel is not once used in reference to the man named Israel. So, what do we get from this? A person can read the entire New Testament and never know there was a man named Israel. And this is why you will have people who claim to know the Bible talk about the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Well, he was the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob until he, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, changed Jacob's name. Now, people don't have a problem with Abraham and will tell you he changed his name from Abram to Abraham. So they don't say the God of Abram. They say the God of Abraham, while ignoring the fact that he says your name will no longer be called Jacob. But that is not in the New Testament. And so a person can read throughout, from Matthew all the way through Revelation, and never realize that there was a man named Jacob, and that all of these references come from that man. When people think of Israel today, they think of what? A land. Now, Hebrews will say, well, we're Israelites or Hebrew Israelites, meaning we're of the tribes. But how many of you know the 12 sons of Israel was born to a man named Jacob? So if a person wants to identify Jacob as the 12 tribes, instead of saying the 12 tribes or the 12 sons of Israel, they should say the 12 tribes or the 12 sons of Jacob. And so in some senses, we've got going on in our mind, there's Israel and there's Jacob. But when it comes down to Israel, we will identify and relate him to all of these things, not the man whom the Almighty changed his name. And therefore, we miss and continue on as if it never occurred. These people would not know that the people of Israel came from a man named Israel. They would not know that the 12 tribes of Israel were from the 12 sons of the man, Israel. They would not know that the land of Israel was named after the man, Israel. They would not know that the children of Israel was in reference to the man, Israel, and instead connect the children to the land of Israel, which is named after the man, Israel. And you may say, well, why are you making such a big deal out of this? Because the Almighty made a big deal out of it. He could have left them as Jacob, but he didn't. And he said, you will no longer be called Jacob. So if he says, you will no longer be called Jacob, if he said that, and we know he said that, why would people continue to do it? Because people are rebellious against the word. They're rebellious against the one who spoke it and gave it. And even though we'll have the word, we'll manipulate or use the word the way they want to, so that they don't necessarily have to necessarily come underneath the word and ultimately bring the Almighty underneath their denomination. You know that you see yourself as a God, even though you may not allow your mouth to acknowledge you as a God, because you think the world revolves around you. You think I'm lying? Let somebody in your space and they disrespect your space. See how fast you cut them off. Excommunicate them, exile them. See, you too humble to identify yourself as God, but you operate like you are. That's the way we as people are, which is why there's a lot of people who have been exiled in our lives. A lot of people who have been cut off in our lives. A lot of people who have been sent away. A lot of people, like, you know, it's like put a mark on them. We don't want nothing bad to happen to them, but they've been marked. You see? Israel is called Jacob throughout the New Testament. He's never called Israel, as if Jehovah never changed his name. And this is the thing that I couldn't get or wrap my head around, but it helped me understand how people who, even folks who are Torah observant, see, if you are Torah observant, how can you still refer to Israel as Jacob? You have to ask yourself, I'm simply presenting to you what he said. People say, well, it says Jacob here. It said Jacob here. Yeah. Because it's written. Now, let me ask you this. Did Jehovah write it? Did he write your Bible like he did with the commandments with his own finger? Or was it scribed? Is it possible that there are scribal bits? We found some of them. The same writer uses Israel and Jacob in the same sentence. It's like, okay, what's the rule here? Is he Israel and Jacob still, even after his name has been changed? What's the rule? Hmm. These little things, brothers and sisters, make a lot of difference when it comes down even to the change in your brain. Because if man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes forth out of his mouth, what's the point of telling us he changed his name and expect us to continue to use a name that was changed? I know I'm making a big deal out of it, but hopefully someday you'll see why. In many references in the New Testament, the name Jacob is used after Jehovah changed his name to Israel. And as I stated, this could be the main reason why New Testament people and many Hebrew roots refer to the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob instead of the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, because they are trained to remember the man Jacob and not the man Israel. Therefore, most people connect the name Israel to the land, the tribe, the people, the nation, the kingdom, and not the man. When you say you are an Israelite, you're acknowledging the man, but then turn around and say he's Jacob, that would make you a Jacobite. Would it not? So you're Hebrew Jacobites. Now that doesn't make sense to people. Like, what they're doing makes sense. Verse 3, and Judas. And here's where I start changing Judas to Judah. Why? Because Judas is Judah, and Judas is the Greek form of the Hebrew Judah. So you'll find Judah and Judas in the Greek portion of the Bible, but you'll only find Judah in the Hebrew portion of the Bible, because there is no name Judas in Hebrew. Now, and Judah begat Phares, which in the Old Testament is Perez, and Zerah of Tamar, which in the Old Testament is Tamar. And Phares begat Esrom, and Esrom begat Aram. Now, by tracing Yeshua's genealogy to Judah, Matthew identifies Yeshua as from the tribe of Judah and connects Yeshua to the prophecy given to Israel when he spoke these words in Genesis 49, the scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet until Shiloh come, and unto him shall the gathering of the people be. And we dealt with this verse when we were going through Genesis. Now, this word Tamar is actually Tamar, and Tamar was a woman of Canaan, a Canaanite. If you remember, Judah left. He left his people, and he went and began to associate with this Adullamite. So he left his brethren, and he went and he dwelled among the people of Adullam. And there he married a Canaanite woman, and he had some sons. And one of his sons, he gave a wife named Tamar. And Tamar, husband died. And then, according to the law, Abraham gave Tamar his second son, and he died. And neither one of them were able to produce a child through her. She dressed up as a harlot, and she had relations with Judah, and brought forth sons. And from those sons that she brought forth, because remember, Judah was living among the Canaanites, married a Canaanite, and gave his sons a Canaanite wife. So what do we see here? Yeshua, the Israelite, had Canaanite ancestry. Verse 4, and Aram begat Aminadab, and Aminadab begat Nahshon, And their son begot Salmon, and Salmon begot Boaz of Rahab. And Boaz begot Obed of Ruth, and Obed begot Jesse. Now, I have Rahab and Ruth bold and underlined because Rahab was from the city of Jericho, and Jericho was in the land of Canaan, and Rahab was a Canaanite. Ruth was from the people of Moab, which makes Ruth a Moabite. So now you have Rahab, which also was a harlot, by the way. A Canaanite. And then Ruth the Moabite. So what else we see in Yeshua's ancestry? We see another Canaanite. And then we see a Moabite. And there are things that are spoken about the Canaanites and the Moabites that would say to the Israelites to have nothing to do with them. But yet, they are part of the Messiah's heritage. As I'm looking at this, because in dealing with my own heritage, as an African-American man who have looked up to the best of my ability as far as I could go in my genealogy, come to find that my ancestry is of Irish descent. And I was able to trace my dad back to a certain area in Mississippi who came from Alabama. And that there is this the idea of Bailey was tracing my great-grandfather back, which was considered mulatto. Now, those of you know anything about mulatto, you know mulatto is a mixed race baby. And then looking at the father of this mulatto child, which happened to be my great-granddaddy, who was of Irish descent. So here I am, a black man with Irish white heritage, who came out of slavery. And one could get to a point to where they begin to denounce their heritage, but it's not about where I came from and who I came through as much as it is about my relationship to my Creator, because He's not looking at all of that to say, this is who you are. Who I was, regardless to what my ancestry was a sinner. I was born in sin. They were born in sin. They before them were born in sin. And even the purest race of people in the earth was born in sin. So it don't matter how pure you think you are, you were born in sin. The only one who were not born in sin is the one who was not born through the semen or sperm of a man. And this is going to bring us to what this genealogy is about. By connecting the bloodline of Yeshua to David, the king of Israel, chosen by Jehovah, when he prophetically spoke through Israel that the scepter would always remain in the house of Judah, Matthew reveals Yeshua as king and royal lineage to the house of David. Now, Luke shares with us the words spoken to Mary. This is when the angel visited her and said, "Behold, thou shalt conceive in thy womb and bring forth a son, and shall call his name Yeshua. He shall be great and shall be called the Son of the Highest, and the Lord Elohim shall give unto him the throne of his father David." So this angel is speaking to Mary, who happens to be part of David's bloodline. "And he shall reign over the house of Israel forever, and of his kingdom there shall be no end. So here, Messiah or Luke is writing, and he refers to Jacob instead of Israel. You see, Matthew identifies David's sin with the murder of Uriah and the marriage of his wife Bathsheba. Now, you would know that if you didn't know the history. And so he says, and Jesse begot David the king. And David the king begot Solomon of her that had been the wife of Uriah's. So what is he saying? Because see, David had a wife. Matter of fact, David had more than one wife. And he had children by him. But he saw Uriah's wife and developed a plan to have relationship with her, and then come to find out she was pregnant, and devised another plan on how to have Uriah put on the front line, knowing that those who went to the front line didn't come back. And so Father sent the prophet to David to confront him for what he did. And in that process, dealt with him. And now that Uriah is dead, Bathsheba becomes a widow, and David marries her. The word here, Bathsheba, daughter of an oath, the wife of Uriah, whom David had murdered, having an adulterous relationship with her, subsequently, the wife of David, there were four children that came from this marriage. Solomon, Shimeah, Shobab, and Nathan. Solomon, Shimeah, Shobab, and Nathan. Remember that. The sons of David, born to him from Bathsheba, as I said, and here it points it out in 1 Chronicles 3:5, and these were born unto him in Jerusalem: Shimeah, Shobab, Nathan, and Solomon, four of Bathsheba, the daughter of Amiel. Verse 7, Matthew. And Solomon begat Rehoboam. Now here's Rehoboam, but it's Rehoboam in the Tanakh. And Rehoboam begat Abiah, and Abiah begat Asa. Matthew here is following David's bloodline through his son Solomon. Through Solomon's son Rehoboam, the first king of the southern kingdom, not Jeroboam, the first king of the northern kingdom after the death of Solomon when the kingdom split. So Solomon was the last king that operated or reigned over a united kingdom. So Israel was one. When Solomon split, Israel became two. And there was a southern kingdom, which Jeroboam or Rehoboam reigned over. And then there was the northern kingdom, which Jeroboam reigned over. Jeroboam led the people into idolatry. Rehoboam was the legitimate king of the house of Judah. That's when the two houses came, the house of Judah and the house of Israel. In verse 8, and Asa begat Jehoshaphat, or Josaphat here, and Jehoshaphat, or Josaphat, begat Joram, and Joram begat Ozias, and Ozias begat Jotham, and Jotham begat Achaz, and Achaz begat Ezekias, and Ezekias begat Manasseh, and Manasseh begat Amon, and Amon begat Josias, and Josias begat Jechonias, and his brethren. about the time they were carried away to Babylon. So what does Matthew does? What does he do? Matthew, in communicating with the children of Israel, by bringing out this genealogy the way he does, or when he's communicating to his audience, he's saying, listen, this is how we trace him. But in order to do a proper trace, you have to remember all the things that was associated with these individuals. You see, when we hear the names of people, there's a tendency to associate certain things, whether they're good or bad, with the person that we hear the name of, if we have that knowledge. And so, in speaking these things, his audience is forced to remember the fact that we were carried into Babylon, or why we carried into Babylon. People don't like to be reminded of the wrongs they've done. People want you to forget the things that they've done. And once we confess and repent, they should. But when you deal with the history of a people, if this is your ancestry, you can't separate yourself from your ancestry while still claiming the benefit of your ancestry. How can you denounce it but still claim the benefit of it? How can you say you want nothing to do with them, but you still operate in the inheritance that came from them? You get this? And so when Matthew is laying all this out, he's saying, listen, yes, I know that you all and we may consider ourselves to be a proud people, but remember, we already identified Matthew, who is the same as Levi, who was a tax collector, who was despised by the Israelites to begin with. So Matthew has had to come to grips with the fact that he operates in an area of business and commerce that is despicable amongst the people. So he's already been able to identify as one despised. When you are one who've already identified as one despised, you don't have a problem exposing those who consider themselves to be proudful by putting a mirror in front of them. So you think you this, but let's see where you came from. See, I know you think you all this, but here's your ancestry. These your people. This is what your people did. And you operating in the pride like you always been, you see, on top. And the thing about the Almighty is the Almighty wants us always to remember where he has brought us from. Not to condemn us, but that we never forget and never return to it. See, if you don't remember where you've come from, if you don't remember what he's delivered you from, you will forget what he has brought you through, and you will become an oppressor as you have been oppressed. You just flip the script. And this is one of the downsides of this whole idea of the Hebrew Israelites taking scripture and twisting it to where now, because you are black and former slaves, you're going to become the master of the white folks and make them your slave. See, that thinking is the identity of people who move into a place of pride That's pride, folks. The fact that you would be a people who even look to the oppression of other people because of their ethnicity. That's not the heart of the Almighty. That's the heart of some sinister belief theological viewpoint. And people can get endeared to a theological viewpoint even though the very premise of it is wicked. How can you be called? See, and it's easy to do this when you reject Messiah, when you reject Yeshua. Because there are a lot of people who are Israelites, but denounce or deny or reject the fact that Yeshua, who was sent by the Almighty to take, if Yeshua dealt with the sins of the world, did he not deal with the sins of the people who committed the sins? And if those people denounce and renounce those sins and repent of those sins, even the sins of their ancestors, and come into faith in Messiah, then all who come into faith in Messiah, we become part of the same family. That's not a white doctrine. That's not a black doctrine. That's a kingdom doctrine. We have one Father. One Father. There is no who's the greatest. The greatest among us would be servants. Matthew includes the rebellion of the house of Judah that led to the Babylonian captivity, and afterwards when some of the people of Judah returned to the land to rebuild after the Babylonian captivity. Here's what he says in verse 12. And after they were brought to Babylon, Jeconias begat Salathiel, and Salathiel begat Zerubbabel, and Zerubbabel begat Abiad. Abiad begat Eliakim, and Eliakim begat Azar, and Azar begat Zadok, and Zadok begat Akim, and Akim begat Eliad. And Eliad begat Eleazar, and Eleazar begat Matthan, and Matthan begat Jacob, and Jacob begat Joseph, the husband of Mary, of whom was born Yeshua, who is called Messiah. Now, I just want to point some things out here. Joseph, we know that Joseph was not the biological father of Yeshua, right? Joseph, though, was the legal father. Joseph's name, if there was a birth certificate, Joseph's name would have been on that birth certificate. He was the legal father of Yeshua by marriage. As the husband of Mary, Matthew points that out, the mother of Messiah Yeshua. So Matthew traces Joseph's lineage. Joseph's genealogy comes through who? Solomon, David's son. Luke traces another lineage, seemingly, possibly, the lineage of Mary through David's son, Nathan, the brother of Solomon, and another son of Bathsheba. Remember, David had four sons through Bathsheba: Solomon, Shemaiah, Shobab, and Nathan. If you look at the sons of David, and we saw that again, First Chronicles 3:5. But if you look at Luke's genealogy, here's what you'll see in verse 23. And Yeshua himself began to be about 30 years of age, being, and then in parentheses, as was supposed. So Matthew don't deal with the as was supposed. Luke deals with the as was supposed, understanding that Jacob or Joseph was not the biological father, but he was supposed, as was supposed, identified as the biological father, although he wasn't. But then if you jump down to verse 31, it shows in Luke 3, which was the son of Maliah, which was the son of Menan, which was the son of Mattathah, which was the son of Nathan, which was the son of David. And this is where you will see the difference between Matthew's genealogy in Matthew 1 and Luke's genealogy in Luke chapter 3. They both, Mary and Joseph, came through David, but one of them was the offspring of Solomon, and the other was the offspring of Nathan, Solomon's brother. So you trace Nathan and Solomon to who? David. They were both descendants of David, but they came through two different lines, both of them royal lines. And so I kind of suspected that I would get that question somewhere in the Q&A. So I just went on and dealt with it so we can move on. And then, so all the generations from Abraham to David are 14 generations, and from David unto the carrying away into Babylon are 14 generations. And from the carrying away into Babylon unto Messiah are 14 generations. It's hard to put years to a generation. Now, I know that we could look up the word in the Greek, and the Greek gives us a particular number per se of a generation. And there are a few rules that seem to be employed in identifying what a generation is. In some rules, it has to do with the age of a person by the time they bring forth another child. Another could be the age of a person in their lifetime. So here's the first generation. And then, like we saw in Exodus, that generation died. And so when you look at the lifespan of that generation and the people of that generation, you could see that the lifespan could be anywhere from 100 to 140. You look at the generation, the lifespan of Abraham, the lifespan of Isaac, the lifespan of Israel, the lifespan of Joseph. But by the time you get to David, and you begin to put the numbers together, how old he was when he began to reign, where he reigned, how long he reigned, calculated that his lifespan was about 70 years. By the time you get to Solomon and do those calculations, his lifespan was about 60 years. You go back before the flood. So what I'm saying is that depending on the time in the era of a generation, based on the rule that you employ, a generation could be fluid. But here, Matthew identifies 14 generations from Abraham to David, 14 generations from David to the carrying away into Babylon, and then 14 generations from the carrying away into Babylon unto Messiah. So you see all of these, and you have to ask yourself, how do I take this? How do I interpret what we've just looked at? One, when you begin to communicate with people, you're going to see that what is taking place here in Matthew is giving us history. He's giving us history that if I'm reading this and I really want to understand instead of just brushing over it because I can't pronounce the words, I'm not gonna see all of the clues that Matthew lay out right here in front of us. You see, and if I'm a proud people, what Matthew deals with in this particular genealogy is said, listen, for all you so-called proud people who want to demonize me and call me all kinds of wicked and evil because of my employment, you know, look at the mote in your own eye. Don't allow people to look down on you because of your heritage or your ancestry or because of where you came from. Because where you came from and through whom you came from does not define who you are, unless you're operating like that. You see. There was a time when I was very proud to be a Bailey. Bailey had a reputation. In some people, it evoked fear. I was a young one of a large family, and my brothers and sisters were terrorists. So you mess with the Bailey, you got some problems, and people knew better. But there were some folks who had names that was more terrorizing than Bailey. And we knew not to mess with them. And you know how your parents would tell you, when you leave the house, you represent them. When we come into Messiah, we have a new identity. I came from that, but that's not who I represent anymore. I have been given a new identity. My new identity is in Messiah. I am a new creation. And now I got to learn how to operate in this newness and stop operating in the old. That's who I was. This is who he is calling me to be. I'm not fully there yet, but I'm making every effort diligently to become what he is calling me to be. And so next week, Father willing, we'll move into the birth and we'll begin to look at the circumstances surrounding Messiah's birth, because his birth is important just as his genealogy and just as the connection. Because again, Matthew is not dealing with the people that is ignorant of the history of Israel and the genealogy of the bloodlines, because he knows and the people know that the Messiah is going to come through a particular tribe. Now remember, Judah had some brothers, Simeon, Reuben, Levi, and then there was Judah. And then there was Issachar and Zebulun. These were not the sons of Rachel. They were the sons of Leah. And so Judah was number four. He wasn't the firstborn. And remember, as we went through Genesis, we saw how Reuben was disqualified, and we saw how Simeon and Levi was disqualified. And so their blood, their birthright was disqualified because of their actions, which landed now the birthright to Judah, the fourth son of Leah. And it's not that these sons were dead. And it wasn't Israel who stripped them. It was Father who stripped them because of their disregard to his law. I'm going to tell you something, people. It is a dangerous thing for people to live in the world created by the Almighty, claiming to be part of the kingdom of the Almighty while disregarding the law of the Almighty. With that, I'll bring this to a close.
Thank you for listening to our podcast today. You can find more inspirational teachings and download our free ebooks on our ministry website at arthurbaileyministries.com. Please follow us on Facebook at House of Israel-Arthur Bailey Ministries, on Instagram at Apostle Arthur Bailey, on Twitter at Apostle Bailey, and you can subscribe to our YouTube page at Apostle Arthur Bailey 1. If you're in the Charlotte area, please come and fellowship with us. We'll do our best to make you feel right at home. Our address is on our website at the About link under Contact Us. Again, thank you for joining us, and until next time, Shalom, Saints.